Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho. Welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on BBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Reggie McBride is an American bass player, born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. Listening to Motown records, he began to play bass at the age of 8. At the age of 14, he played in local bands, and by that time, he was a sought-out session musician, soon to be on the road with the Dramatics and opening up for James Brown. In 1973, he was called by Stevie Wonder to join his Wonder Love, followed by recording the album Fulfillingness, first finale in 1974. His credits include Parliament Funkadelic, Rare Earth, Elton John, Rod Stewart, Keb Moe, Ry Cooder, B.B. King, Van Morrison, Boz Scaggs, Rick Springfield, Herbie Hancock, John Lee Hooker, and so many more others. Reggie continues to ignite the airwaves with his style and technique of bass playing. In 2005, he released his first solo record called Elements. Recently, Reggie has established himself as a fixture in the Playing for Change Band, to the delight of audiences across the United States. Please welcome legendary bassist Reggie McBride to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Reggie.
Hello.
How you doing, man?
Pretty good.
Good, good. So what do you got going on lately?
Well, lately I've been playing with Cal David from the Fabulous Rhinestones.
Okay.
And that's been a lot of fun. He's a great guitar player, and we've been having a lot of fun. And, you know, playing locally and in Palm Springs.
Right.
And it's just been really fun, you know, really fun gig to do.
Now, are you like an official band member, or are you playing on his album, or like a touring guy?
Well, playing in his band, you know, when he plays locally. I had played with Cal in a long time.
Uh-huh.
But he called me up, and I said, I was delighted. I mean, I said, yeah, you know, I'll come and play with you. And he's always been a pretty much a fixture in the Palm Springs area. And you know, we've been playing together ever since we used to play at the Central back in the 70s. I want to say 75, 76, 77.
Right.
You know, after the Rhinestones broke up, of course. I don't know exactly when they broke up, but he's a great guitar player, and he's got this gig going out in Palm Springs that he does, and it's really good. You know, keeps your chops up, and it's really fun.
Do you have is there an album out, a recent album?
Well, I haven't ever recorded with him. I've recorded with him on other projects, but he's got his own album out called Cal David, and some of the songs are nothing new. Thing called Love, and he artist on his own for many years, so you can find his stuff. But I've never actually done his records.
Okay. And he's Cal as in K-A-L, right? Cal David Raskin?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, K-A-L, yes.
That's right. Good. Yeah, there's a lot of great talent out there that, you know, they're not exactly superstars, you know?
Yeah.
But it says here that he was he a member of Sha-Na-Na at one time, and he played with John Mayall?
That's a good question. I believe so.
Yeah. I kind of did a quick check on him right now, and he's had a 50-year music career. He's been around for a while.
Oh, yeah, he's a great cat, man.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of fun to play with him. Really a great personality. You know, it's just really fun to be with.
It's good to have old friends, isn't it? Because out of the blue, they can give you a holler and say, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And you've been around, man. You've been around since when you were playing with the Dramatics.
Yeah.
How old were you?
I was 15 years old.
Holy cow!
When I started with the Dramatics, I was 15.
That's crazy.
Yeah, you know, a matter of fact, we were out. We opened for James Brown.
Yep.
After I was 16, 17, and it was just James Brown and his review.
Right.
Who had Rufus Thomas on his review, you know, and they would all come out before, you know, and as well as us with the Dramatic. We toured with him, and we did a solid 6 months. And pretty soon, James Brown went to one of the Dramatics, a leader, and said, how old is that bass player? And he said, you know, so Dramatic told me, oh, he's 15, I think, or 16, you know. He said, did he finish school? And they asked me if I finished school. He got my diploma yet, you know, and I said, no. And James sent me home, you know, even James Brown took a break, you know, and they said, we're going to let him go home for a couple of weeks and get his diploma.
Really?
Then he'd come back on the road.
Really?
Yeah, and so I did that. I mean, we were all close because when we were touring with James Brown, we used to travel on the band bus.
Uh-huh.
That had James Brown written on the side.
Right.
He wouldn't be on the bus, but the band members, Bobby Bird and everybody would be on the bus. The whole show would travel as a show, you know. And before that, we would meet James Brown in a station wagon and a U-Haul on the back with our gear. And, you know, we'd get to the show, open it up for James, and we'd load in our gear, and we'd play our little set, and then James Brown's band would play a whole set, and they would bring up all the stars, Rufus Thomas, and Lynn Collins and the Soul Twins,
mm-hmm.
and would come up, and they would do two, three songs, and it was a whole show, you know, a whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would announce, and now, drum roll, and James Brown. You know, that's when the guy says, mm-hmm. James Brown. And James Brown would come out, and the first song they would do is whatever hit that he had out at the time.
Right.
He had, I forget the name of the song, but it started off with the horns,
mm-hmm.
and they would play everything up-tempo and
right.
fast. And we played the Apollo Theater every two times a month and packed it.
Yep.
I mean, totally sold it out.
Yeah.
So I more or less got to live in New New York, and I didn't live in New York, but, you know, we flew to New York, and we were going to play the Apollo. And we used to do that a couple of times a month per year. We played the Apollo. We play all on the, mostly on the East Coast, because I think that's where all his fans were. And then we came out to Hollywood, and we did a gig, too. And all on the bus.
Wow. That's a lot of and, traffic.
Yeah, and Bobby Bird, too. He would be on the bus with us, and, you know, we'd be talking and kicking and getting to know each other.
Hmm.
And Fred Wesley and the band. And that was just a fantastic time for me, because by that time I was 17, and I believe I had my diploma by 17 years old. Yeah.
Wow.
So I was out there full blast playing with the Dramatics.
Exactly.
And we would open for James. And the Dramatics would do their own gigs, you know, as well.
Right.
And locally and everywhere in the South and everywhere. And that was a fantastic experience. You know, the first time I ever toured, that was a fantastic experience. And so,
yeah, you're basically
very much, you know, but it was just exciting.
You're basically thrown to the wolves.
Yeah, I was thrown to the wolves. But you know what? I knew all of their stuff. I knew all the James Brown stuff.
Mm.
You know, and it wasn't because we used to sit and practice and practice and practice. My ear was developed. So by the time I was 11, and I could play anything that I heard,
right,
bass part, and I knew all the horn parts, and I knew the guitar part, and that's from having my own band around Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I call the Erosions. And we used to be a 10-piece band, kind of like Tower of Power.
Yeah. Well.
And I was 11, and I was heading this band, you know, doing the cutoffs and everything.
Yep.
And me and the drummer, it was a guy by the name of Norman Terry.
Mm-hmm.
We used to listen to James Brown at his house. With our ears on the speaker. I mean, that's how close we studied James Brown.
Mm-hmm.
So any music that came over the radio, me and him, we used to study the drum and the bass part, because I played drums in school, so I'm going back a little bit.
Yep.
And I really wanted to be I started off as a drummer because my mother bought me a pair of bongos when I was 5 and 6 years old. And then I switched to guitar and then switched to bass.
Right.
And that's when I was in a band. And, you know, we would play talent shows, but we would learn everything from Tighten Up.
Mm-hmm.
To Archie Bell and Drill.
Yep.
To Delphonics. To, we would practice for hours and hours. I mean, Isaac Hayes, the album Hot Buttered Soul.
Right.
We would practice that song until we got it perfect. And we had, like I say, a 10-piece band. And we would just practice and play that song for hours and hours. By the time I get to Phoenix, we played that for hours and hours and hours. And by the end of the day, if you didn't know it, you were out.
You're out, yeah. You're not going to get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that went for every song. You know, that was the importance at that age to...
Yeah.
Make it sound like the record. And if it didn't, I used to interrupt the band and say, hey, playing it like the record. Just listen to the record, man. You know. And that's the way I got my ear.
Well, you got to have a good ear to do that, you know. And
yeah.
You know, I admire a lot of people that play, you know, by ear, and they don't know how to read music. I think that's, you know, amazing. I really do.
Oh, yeah, sure. That is. I mean, to me, that was half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Is having a good ear and learning and just listening, you know.
You got to have patience, too. A lot of patience.
Yeah, you got to have patience.
Mm-hmm.
And, with the band we had, you know, it wasn't so much, well, you got to hurry up, we got to get these parts, because we weren't under that pressure.
Right.
We were just kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, let's slow down. And I tell the saxophone player I couldn't write it out or anything like that.
Right.
You know, I could, I didn't know how to read because I took percussion in school, high school.
Yep.
But, and then I took some guitar lessons when I was very young. You know, when I was 8 years old, I used to take guitar lessons. And, they taught me reading, you know, the male Bain method.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And I had some great teachers because they were patient with me. And so when I was in this band, I used to dictate all the parts to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the horn parts and everything. And I would just play it out on my bass. And I say, you know, they say, this note? No. I said, nope. Let me play it for you. Play this exactly what you hear.
Right.
And it'll work out. So we had harmony in the horns. And, you know, we had, at one point, we had five horn players.
Wow.
And it was a really great band, and we won all the talent shows, and, you know, and then, long story short, I got the gig with the Dramatics, the drummer. Said, hey, Reg, you want to go out on the road?
Mm-hmm.
I said, I've never been on the road before. He said, oh, man, it's great. You know, I did one gig with the Dramatics, but I knew who the Dramatics were, because they had the hit out, What You See Is What You Get.
Yep, and In the Rain.
Yeah.
In the rain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that, I said, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where are we going? You know, I asked my mom and dad. They said, you can't go on the road. No, you're going to be an engineer.
I figured that.
You know, and we were all engineers. You know,
really?
Brothers, we were all electrical engineers.
Oh, man.
That's what we're being trained for.
Well, see, I don't blame your parents there, because there's a lot of money in being an engineer.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
That's, when you got paid, yeah.
When you got paid, yeah.
Yeah. But some of that ended up being worse than the music business, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I was interested in doing both, though, because I loved doing electrical work.
Right.
And putting in plugs and light fixtures, and I do my own house.
I can't do that.
You know, something goes out, I fix it myself.
That's awesome. Yeah, I admire you guys like you. I wanted to say something though about James Brown. You know, guys like Eddie Murphy might mock him, you know, but I always thought James Brown was kind of like the Frank Zappa of soul music, because, you know, his music was very intricate, you know?
Yeah. Actually, when you really listen to it and you get down into it, those parts were, I didn't know who was writing the parts, because I never would see James Brown at the rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
It was always Fred Wesley, the trombone player.
Okay.
And it was Bobby Bird would be there, and the horn players were just so good that I don't know if they ever wrote anything out, or they would just rehearse the crap out of it.
Yeah,
you know, until I watched them rehearse, and they would do it over and over and over again, repeat repetition until they got it real tight. And it didn't take them long. Because they were, and I believe it was mostly by ear, you know, because they had routines that they had to do on stage.
Right, well. Right, exactly.
Yeah, so they couldn't be reading and doing routines at the same time. But I believe it was Fred Wesley who was the, well, that's the band leader.
Mm-hmm.
And that original band with Jabbo on drums, Fred Williams on bass, and they recorded Cold Sweat. And you know, all that stuff out of the 60s. And I thought it was just amazing.
Yeah, there was nobody like James, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and they were the most friendly cats.
Yeah.
I mean, they took us in as family.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a wonderful experience.
Yeah. And then you went on to work with Stevie, right? Stevie Wonder?
Yeah, I went from there, and I was sitting at home. You know, we had taken a break
right.
with the Dramatics.
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting at home, and, you know, by this time I was in, like, 20. I was about 20 years old.
Oh, okay. you're an old man already.
Yeah, like, no, I was 18, actually. I was 18 going on 19.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And somebody called me, and I said, who is it? He said, this is Stevie.
Oh, jeez.
I said, Stevie who? He said, Stevie Wonder. I said, you bullshit. I said, just like that.
You know, you should have said, prove it. Sing a song.
No, he started talking, and I said, oh, shit. It's really Stevie Wonder.
Man.
You know. And so he said that he wanted me to come to New York, and he heard about me through mm-hmm. Ray Parker.
Right.
Who, me and Ray, we grew up together. I mean, it was basically... Ray used to sit in with our band with the horns and everything, and we got to know him.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we lived in the suburbs. We lived in Inkster, Michigan.
Okay.
And I was born in Detroit, but we moved from Detroit to the suburbs, which is Inkster near Dearborn.
Did you say you knew, is it Ray Parker? Is that who you said?
Yeah.
Ray Parker Jr.?
Ray Parker Jr.
Yeah, man. He's great.
Yeah.
Yep.
He used to come all the way to the suburbs.
Huh.
To play with us, to practice with us.
Well, for the listeners who don't know, he was in radio. He did Ghostbusters, the theme from Ghostbusters. Yeah. I think he worked with Barry White. Yeah, he did a lot of stuff, man. Great guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great guitar player.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Go ahead.
Excellent. Yeah. And so, after a while, I think I was 18, you know, like I say, 18, mm-hmm. going on 19.
Right.
And Ray Parker was with Stevie and left Stevie Wonder, but he kept in touch with Stevie. And whenever Stevie needed a band member, Stevie would go to him and say, hey man, you know, a good bass player, you know, blah, 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 you know. And so Ray evidently told him, yeah, I know a great bass player. He's Reggie McBride.
Yeah.
Great bass player.
Yeah.
So I get this call, and Scott Edwards was the bass player in Stevie's band at the time. And they were taking a break because it was just after Stevie's accident that he called me. And I don't know if you know it or not, but he had a serious car accident on the road.
Right. I think I heard about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was pretty, you know, pretty serious and intense. He got hurt
mm-hmm.
behind that. And so they were on a break. And Ray even invited me to come to a show to see Stevie.
Right.
And I came to a show. I used to see Stevie all the time growing up in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go to the Motown Review every year. You know, we even had a wardrobe to put on to go see the show. Everybody in Detroit.
Well, Stevie's like you. He started out really young.
Yeah.
He was a kid.
Yeah, he was a kid.
Yeah.
And I used to see him when he was about 11 or 12
right.
years old. Little, and they called him Little Stevie Wonder.
Little Stevie, yeah.
And I said, man, this guy's incredible.
Yeah.
He plays drums like nobody did.
Mm-hmm.
And, anyway, I'm talking to him. He said, I want you to come to New York. And, you know, Ray Parker mentioned your name. So I'm giving you a call. I want you to come to New York and audition to be in my band.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to breathe then. And I'm going like, wow. You know. And so I told my mom, you know, my mom said, Stevie Wonder. And my dad said, Stevie Wonder. I said, yeah. So I'm going to New York. They said, when? Tomorrow. And Scott Edwards evidently left the band because mm-hmm. he'd been there for so long.
Right.
And he wanted to go and do sessions, which he did. Became really successful. Bass player, doing sessions.
Right.
So I got to New York, and they picked me up, and they took me to the Fifth Avenue Hotel. And so I'm sitting in my room in the Fifth Avenue Hotel. And, you know, they said, well, we all stay here. You know, we this is our camp out,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Fifth Avenue Hotel.
Right.
And so they explained that to me, and they said, Stevie's going to come down, or you're going to come down to his room. He's got a clavinet in his room.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a bass amp. So he had an orange amp in there. And I took my bass in there. And I knocked on the door. You know, I didn't knock on the door, but they had me just sit and wait till Stevie arrived.
Right.
So Stevie came busting through the door. And he grabbed me and he started beating me up. Can you imagine how scary this is?
Wow.
It's like, what? I mean, he's just playing around, you know.
Yeah, you're probably going, does he like me or does he hate me?
Yeah. And I said, oh, man, you know, I said, okay, that's what we're going to do. Well, we're going to fight, huh? You know, no, let me switch that around. I mean, actually, I played 4 bars of Higher Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew all of his stuff.
Yep.
Because growing up, I knew Higher Ground.
Sure.
And I knew to tune my bass down a half step, so it'd be an E flat because he plays on the black keys only.
Right.
And,
He plays on the black keys only? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, he plays, it's all, you know, you think something is in C.
Right.
It's in B.
Huh. I didn't know that.
So you gotta get that straight in your mind.
Right.
That he's playing, he leads on the black keys. Since he's blind,
mm-hmm.
that's the best keys that he can feel.
I got you.
And cause they're elevated. And we played a couple of bars at Higher Ground. He jumped off the piano, and that's when he peaked there.
And you said, well, that's it for me and Stevie. See you guys. It's all over.
And wow. You know, what a great way to start. A great way to meet.
I guess he was happy then.
I guess he was happy to see me.
He was happy to see me. Yeah, that's cool. Bunch of, like you said, yeah. A bunch of down-to-earth guys, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're just like brothers.
Yeah. Man.
And he didn't tell me I had the gig or anything.
Uh-huh.
We just went to the studio.
Right.
Immediately. I mean, I don't know if I went home. I said, I got to go home first. I think I came back a week later, and we went straight into the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And just like that. Or I went home for a couple of days. He said, I'll give you a couple of days. And I want you back here. So they flew me home, they flew me back, and boom, we're in the record plant in New York.
Right.
And he had his synthesizer set up, and then Tonto.
Yeah.
And Bob Margoloff and Malcolm Cecil were there. And they were the engineers and the producers for Intervision. And we started tracking, and Ollie Brown was on drums. Michael Cimbello was playing guitar. And me and Stevie were the rhythm section.
Mm-hmm.
And we tracked all day. We must have tracked 4 or 5 songs a day. And I was there for a week. We cut, songs that I know in my mind.
Right.
That haven't been released, and we cut the hit for Rufus was Tell Me Something Good.
Oh, really? Is that right?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah. And we cut Minnie Rupertson's Perfect Angel.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, we started on that record. And
yeah, Perfect Angel had Loving You on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. And next thing you know, I'm hearing it over the radio.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard myself over the radio. I said, this is freaky.
well, plus, you did, You Haven't Done Nothing. You were on that tune, right?
Yeah.
You were on that tune.
Like that
was,
yeah. Yeah, that was one of the songs that we cut when we were at the record plant in L.A.
Right.
And he called me in the studio one day, and he had all these clavinets going, blah, 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 you know, the intro of the song.
Right.
And he had basically the song pretty much done, and he overdubbed me on the bass.
Mm-hmm.
So I started playing the bass. He said, no, I don't want you to play like you normally play. I said, well, how do you want it? And it was just me and him and Bob Margoloff.
Mm-hmm.
And Malcolm Cecil in the studio. So he said, I want you to hit the strings like a hammer.
Huh.
You know, and I said, well, you know, sort of like this with my thumb. He said, no, give me your bass. So I gave him my bass. He said, and picked up the bass, and he said, I want you to take one your index finger,
mm-hmm.
and I want you to hit it like a hammer. And so I did that, and he said, no. He took my wrist, and he said, loosen up your wrist. I said, okay. So you really want it like a hammer, you know, that's swinging, you know.
Yeah.
He said, yes, that's what I want. I did the whole track like that, and meanwhile, Bob Margoloff was freaking out because he thought we were going to pop the speakers out of the monitor.
Right.
And, you know, he said, you can't do that, Steve. You know, and Stevie told him, shut up. I know what I'm doing. It was kind of like Star Trek.
That's funny.
You know, where Scotty was going, you know, but I don't have enough power.
Yeah.
You know?
I need more power, Captain.
I need more power. Stevie said, shut up. I know what I'm doing.
I, I need more cowbell. More cowbell. Gotta have more cowbell. That's funny. That's funny.
You're gonna break it. You're gonna break it. But got the track done.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no vocal. It was just clarinet.
Yep.
And he did some more overdubs on it, evidently. And then the next week I turned around and it was out. It was top 10.
He had the Jackson 5 in the studio too, right?
Oh yeah, they used to be in and out of the studio all the time.
Hmm.
And they would do parts for Stevie.
Right.
And Stevie, we would do tracks for the Jackson.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. So we got to know them real well.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael, was just a little kid. And they all used to come in. His father used to bring them in. And the whole family would be there. And that was just amazing. I mean, what an amazing experience.
You know, I didn't know Syreeta Wright was married to Stevie Wonder. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they were married.
Yep.
That was before I got in the band.
Right.
And we did Syreeta's record.
I love Syreeta. I absolutely adored Syreeta. What a voice.
I do too. Yeah.
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 And also Denise Williams. You worked with Denise Williams a lot too, I think.
Yeah. Denise, we used to call her Niecy.
Niecy? Yep.
And she was in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And I would watch them do vocals. And Stevie would be producing a vocal session, and I thought it was the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
The way that he hears harmonies. They were doing Simon Says.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one track, and I said, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
And one time, Stevie said, hey, man, he had this track called Please Don't Go on that same record.
Uh-huh.
He said, I want you to play on this. And so I listened, and he had synth bass on it. And I said, Stevie, you already got this, man. I can't top that. And so we all went in committee, and we went to talk to Bob. Bob stuck up for me and said, you know, this is right. You got the bass line on this already.
Mm-hmm.
And it's done. I said, I'll try to do something if you want me to, but I don't think I can top that. Because what you're doing on the Moog, the R2600 thing,
right,
is already there. It's perfect. And he finally, he gave in to our argument. You know, I just didn't want to play on the track because I was going like, I can't outdo that for some reason because it's already there.
Yeah.
You know, the sound is already, I could try.
Right.
You know, I'll try if you want. That's what I told.
Mm-hmm.
So they decided to keep it on the record. I said, good, because that's
good.
Phenomenal what you did.
Right.
Everybody agreed.
One of my favorite bands has always been Rare Earth. And you were actually you were actually a member of Rare Earth. I know Pete Rivera, or as they used to call him, Horbecki, I guess. I know him as Peter Rivera. He was the original drummer, original singer of Rare Earth. Yeah. But in your band, I believe Michael Urso left, the bass player. You took over from Michael. Gil Bridges, who's still in the band. Ray, the lead guitar player who's been there for a long time, Ray Manet, he's an awesome guy, great guitar player. And those guys were there when you were there. Also, I think Eddie was there, right, Guzman?
Yeah, Eddie Guzman was there.
Yep.
And they called me, and I was in, I don't know how they found me, but I was in
everybody find you?
Yeah, everybody. And I was amazed, you know, I said, I love, you know, I always did. And I was really young, so I'm still, 20 years old. At 20. 21. And
you've already had a career by 21.
Yeah. So they called me to their management office, and mm-hmm. they said, what we're going to do is we're going to add Frosty from Lee Michaels.
Right.
And you.
Right.
To the band.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, okay. And I said, well, you know, what's the bread like? and they said, well, we can pay you this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was salary, you know, what they did, you know.
Right.
$1,200 a week or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, this is your salary, and you could live on that because back then, that kind of money was good money.
Yeah, it was probably like $5,000 today or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yep.
Yeah. And they gave me a house.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. They said, you know, I want to buy you a house. I really wanted to move my family out to L.A. because I had a wife and I had a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, you know, I got to get them out of Detroit. You know, we got to get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And not that Detroit was bad, but it was just...
Yeah, it was time to go.
Yeah, it was time to go. And the weather was really good. And, you know, Stevie would call. And when Stevie did a project, he would be gone for 6 months or whatever, and mm-hmm. all you were doing is sitting around collecting salary.
Yeah.
Which wasn't bad.
No, not at all.
Yeah. But, you know, everybody, people started getting tired of that.
Yeah.
Going like, well, man, I want to play, you know.
Right, right.
And then you get this call at 12 o'clock at night, but be on the plane and such and such in the morning, coming out to L.A., Stevie wants to do something. So, you had all this time between tours and recording or whatever. And that's when I got the call.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sat there and had a meeting with Vera, and all the members were there. And I said, this is amazing. And the management was there. And we worked out a salary. And I said, okay. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to go and do a new record.
Mm-hmm.
And we got plans to do this, we got that. But whether we work or not, you get this every week.
Right.
I said, fine. And your new house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got it.
Sounds good.
I said, okay. That sounds good. Because Stevie didn't want me to move.
Right.
You want me to stay in Detroit. You know, I found that out because mm-hmm. he wanted everybody to stay where he wanted.
Now, was Motown still in Detroit, or was it in L.A. by then?
Well, it was in L.A. by then.
Okay.
Yeah. No one just said, you know, put your space down. And, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Yeah, it was just moving out to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it was kind of a slow process, but, Stevie Wonder had been out in L.A. for, you know, going back and forth from New York to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
for a few years because that's where he did Intervisions, which was in, Electric Ladyland. And the band was camped out at Electric Ladyland and in New York. And so he wanted everybody to be local.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has this way of picking what he wants you to do.
Right.
You know, because, you know, a lot of it was kind of based on fear that you would leave and Hollywood would suck you up. That's what happened, you know, to a lot of us.
And, yep.
I went with Rare Earth, and I went in the rehearsal one day, and he said, "You missed, you know, we didn't have pages or cell phones or anything back then, or email for that matter. And so you had to have your, you had to be at the hotel when he called it. So you could pick up the phone, and, he, and they say, okay, be at the studio at around about such and such time. And then you'd go, you know. So it was hard to judge what was going on, because at any point in time, you can get called.
Right.
And you got to go in. So I went with Rare Earth, and it was exciting. I mean, I said, wow, you know, Rare Earth, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I missed the rehearsal with Stevie. And when I walked in, you know, evidently somebody had told him, you know, did you join Rare Earth? He didn't know that, did you? And Stevie said he didn't know.
Uh-oh.
Well, that was awkward because everybody, you know, Steve Madeo went with the Rolling Stones. And Trevor was, I think they both went with the Rolling Stones. They were recording. And I said, well, you know, I want to stretch out a little bit. And Stevie would let me play with Etta James. He didn't mind that. But as soon as I got the gig with Rare Earth, he said, no. You know, he said, I'm going to switch. I'm gonna switch bass player.
Right.
So I said, fine. I mean, that's what you want to do. And so we parted ways. And that was around 75, beginning of 75, end of 74.
Right.
And, you know, I really didn't want that to happen, but it happened. It happened, you know, it happened with everybody.
You think that, you think it happened maybe because Rare Earth, because they were still on the Motown label, weren't they, at that time?
Well, yeah, they were on, actually, Rare Earth, we had our own label.
Right, the Rare Earth label, that's right.
The Rare Earth label.
Yeah.
And, you know, Barry Gordy was still very much involved with that. You know, we would have a meeting with Barry, and Barry would say, okay, you guys got $100,000 for your budget.
Right.
One studio.
Right.
And make me a record. And that's what we would do. And I stayed with Rare Earth 5 years. And I did 3 albums.
Yes. Yep.
And then, you know, that was it. You know, that was pretty much it.
Well, Pete came back. Yeah, Pete came back for a while. Michael came back after that. I just missed you. I saw Rare Earth the first time in 73, and it was the original, well, not the original band, but, you know, with Eddie and Mark Olson on keyboards. And they were the opener, and the Funkadelic, it was Rare Earth, Funkadelic, and the Ohio Players, and a band called Leadhead. And that was the first time I saw you know, the horn section with the Ohio Players, and man, I was just blown away. It was incredible.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That was great. The Funkadelic used to be incredible. I played on one record from them.
They were like a Frank Zappa band too, you know. They had that very intricate sound, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah, they had that real. You know, their thing was based around funk.
Yep.
And George Clinton to me was the funkiest guy I've ever lived.
Yeah, I remember seeing George Clinton coming out in a diaper on stage. I said, wow.
Yeah.
I said, you got to be kidding me. Is that what I'm seeing? Is that really him in a diaper?
You know what? You think, you know, sometimes you think, well, not going to go out in the street because you got to watch out for certain people.
Right, right.
That's the way the funkadelics were.
Yeah, yeah.
They were the people that you had to watch out for.
But they were cool and they were hip, you know. And
oh yeah, they were cool. But you know, like Pinky, the drummer.
Uh-huh.
And Eddie Hazel. You know, they got so loaded that so I think Eddie Hazel bit somebody in the neck.
Oh, jeez.
He thought he was Dracula.
Oh, man.
And our manager used to manage Rare Earth mm-hmm. and the Funkadelics at the same time.
Well, that's
and
why they were playing
they
together. Yeah.
Bail him out.
Oh, jeez.
Okay, let's keep going.
Did you know Bootsy?
No, I didn't know Bootsy because Bootsy came after me.
Right, right.
I wasn't in the band.
Uh-huh.
I was a guest Funkadelic on...
I saw that. You're a guest Funkadelic.
Yeah. Me and Frosty. Yeah. That was great, man. What a great bunch of cats, man.
Oh, wow.
Eddie Hazel mm-hmm. on guitar and the keyboard player, I forget his name.
I think I saw him when I saw him do Cosmic Slop, and Ohio Players just did Funky Worm back then. That was before they got Into Fire and all the top 40 hits, you know.
Oh yeah, man! Me and my friends grew up in high school with all the Funkadelic stuff, and we used to listen to it religiously,
mm-hmm.
and Ohio Players too.
You know, I don't think there's anybody left in the Ohio Players. You know, a lot of them have passed on already. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. It is crazy.
The whole band, yeah. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I really miss those days of R&B and soul music. Because, you know, I grew up in D.C. where R&B was huge, you know? I mean, we had, you know, Marvin Gaye was from D.C. Roberta Flack was from D.C., you know?
I remember Lowe's Palace, man. We used to come through D.C. all the time with Dramatics,
mm-hmm.
The Delphonics, the Unifics.
All right, Reggie, I'm gonna blow your mind here. Two doors down from Lowe's Palace was my dad's store on the corner. There's a corner store, electronics. He was there for 15 to 20 years. I knew everybody. I knew everybody from Lowe's Palace there, and like you said, the concerts there were amazing. You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, they were.
Yeah.
They were really great. Yeah, they were really great.
That's where I grew up, right there on F Street in D.C.
Wow. Hey, there was a group called the Young Senators.
Right.
From D.C. Do you remember them?
I think I do.
They used to back up Eddie Kendrick.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That was the funkiest band I ever knew. I mean,
really?
They scared me. It was just like, I was with the Dramatics, and Young Senators opened for us
mm-hmm.
one day and blew us off the stage.
Really?
Yeah. And they weren't even that known. I think they were just local around D.C. at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But Eddie Kendricks used to use them for his tour.
Huh. Yeah, Eddie Kendricks was cool.
Oh, man. Incredible band.
Yeah.
Incredible bass player. And I didn't really get to know them very well. But I saw them play, and they just blew us right off stage. So that's when bands used to blow each other off.
Yeah.
Or try.
Yeah.
And if you manage to do that, you win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, you had the OJs, the Shy Lights. I mean, they all came to D.C. to, you know, Lowe's Palace.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we used to all play at the same time.
Yep.
I mean, not at the same time, but you know, one at a time on the same show.
Yep. The Blue Notes. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and I remember seeing the Delphonics.
The Delphonics, yep. The Whispers.
It blew me away.
Yeah. I knew all
they
those
had
bands.
Three people in the band.
Hmm.
And I believe, you know, they had a very small band.
Mm-hmm.
but they would come out and do those routines, and the drummer was a guy named Fat Larry.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget.
Fat Larry.
Yeah. His cymbals were so high, it looked like they were 10 feet up. But this cat could play, you know, all this la 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 mm-hmm. la la, bees, I love you, and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
They did it so slow, which nobody would think about playing that slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they did it the tempo on the record, or slow. And to me, that was just fantastic, seeing that drummer
mm-hmm.
play. And certain guys play in those bands mm-hmm. because they were just great.
They were incredible. They were incredible. And they all had class, yeah. You know? Every one of those yeah. bands had a lot of class, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what, I mean, I learned a lot from that. I mean, mm-hmm. by that time, I was, like I say, I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
16.
You got a great education, man. You got a great, great education, let me tell you.
Yeah, that sure did.
Reggie, did you play on with Wilson Pickett on American Soul Man? Were you on that?
Yeah.
You did? Mm-hmm. What was Wilson yeah. like? Wilson's got to be one of my favorite soul artists of all time, man. No one can sing like him.
Oh yeah,
you know
he was my favorite too.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a wild man. He came in the session. I arrived. I forget where we were recording. Capitol Records or something.
Right.
You know, and Bob Margoloff was producing. Along with Bobby Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Margoloff was Stevie's engineer, you know, and producer. And I got at the studio a little early. Not early, but, you know, before everybody else. And Bob comes up to me in the parking lot and says, Reggie? You know, and he's a little... He's a short guy, and he looks like Benjamin Franklin.
Boy, that's a real weird image in my head. A short Benjamin Franklin.
He told me Wilson's here, and he's got a gun.
Oh, jeez.
I said, really? So I put my face down and said, wow, that's incredible. I've never met Wilson before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I walk in the studio, and Wilson says, we don't get down, ain't we? I said, well, I guess so.
You sound like him.
You got a gun.
Oh, jeez.
I said, we better, you know. And the session went well, mm-hmm. and we did the midnight hour, and recut it.
Yeah.
And I think it turned out good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, if I didn't ask you this question, Trace would be mad. You and Tommy Bolin, how'd you guys get together?
Oh, well, that was in the time period when I left Rare Earth.
Right.
And when I left Rare Earth, I was became friends with Mark Stein from the Vanilla Fudge.
Yeah, I had Mark on the show. Another good guy.
Did he?
Yep.
Yeah, he's good.
Yep.
Great guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And me and Mark, I would deal with Rare Earth because they stored their gear in my garage.
That's funny.
So some of the cases, at least, you know, some of the gear, some of the cases.
Well, that's because you got the house.
So, yeah.
They gave you the house.
That's why I got the house.
That's why they gave you the house.
Right. So they could have a garage to store stuff in.
Exactly.
And me and Mark used to practice in there with Bruce Gehry.
Mm-hmm.
And so time went on. I broke up with Rare Earth. And me and Mark and Bruce Gehry, the drummer from the Knack.
Oh, from the Knack.
A group called the Knack.
Yeah.
I met them because they lived in the neighborhood. They were neighbors.
Uh-huh.
And we started playing together, and Bobby Cochran playing guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a group. And so Mark, you know, he asked me, he said, "Man, you want to go out on a tour with Tommy Bolin?" I said, "Who's Tommy Bolin?"
Mm-hmm.
He says, "He's a great guitar player, and I'll play his stuff." And he played it for me, and I said, "Yeah, sure." And we played like Teaser and the older stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Yeah, that sounds fun. You know, let's go." And so we started rehearsing with Tommy and Narada. Michael Walden was playing drums.
Mm-hmm.
So it was me, Michael, Norma Bell from Detroit, and Mark Stein.
Mm-hmm.
And we played with Tommy, and we went on a tour, and, you know, quite a long tour. I mean, it was about 4 or 5 weeks, and took a break, and then we went back out again. And by this time, it was around 76, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the bread wasn't all that good, you know, but it was okay.
Right.
And the music was great. And so I got busy doing a lot of projects in the studio, and I couldn't go out on his following tour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when he passed away.
Yeah.
From what I understand. Yeah.
But you were on
I wasn't on.
You were on Private Eyes, right? Didn't you play on that album?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We cut that while we were in the band.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were touring, we went in the studio for a couple of weeks. We went into Cherokee, and we cut Tommy's record. And it was great, man. I met Paul McCartney, came into the room, and said hello to everybody.
Hmm.
And I knew Paul from when we played in London with Stevie.
Right.
At the Rainbow.
Right.
At the Rainbow. And, you know, he hung out backstage. I said, "What, Paul McCartney? He's over there?" So, and, you know, you look around, and there he is. He's looking at me.
That's a beetle.
<We're> on stage.
That's funny.
You know, and you know, I licked my fingers when I played. And, I walked away, you know, I met him, and, you know, we talked for a little bit, you know, and he said, "That's a bloody good gesture you've got there, licking your fingers," you know. I said, "Thank you." And then from then on, I knew him.
Yeah.
And when he came to L.A., I used to see him in the studio. So the next time I saw him was when we were cutting with Tommy Bolin.
Right.
There.
Well, bass player to bass player, you know.
He was cutting wings. That was all.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. But you were also, didn't you do the It's My Pleasure album with Billy Preston and George? George played on that album, right? George Harrison.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was another album that Bob Margolov produced.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And engineered. And, you know, he called me for the session for Billy Preston. And I forget where we cut, but that was fun, man. I mean, Billy Preston's a monster.
Yeah.
He was a monster keyboard player, man. Piano player.
He's another guy that kind of, you know, was fed to the wolves and learned really fast with a lot of incredible legendary musicians, you know, from an early age.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm. Yeah. And it shows, man. He was
Yeah.
And I got to know him. And, you know, we played together, did that record together.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't go out live with him or anything like that. You know, just did the session.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great, man.
Your reaction to McCartney, I had the same reaction. I did a Skype interview with Billy Cobham. And and he started staring at me through Skype. He asked me a question, and I was kind of mesmerized by, hey, I'm talking to Billy Cobham, and I didn't answer him right away. And he's going, you know, he's like a teacher. You know, it's like talking to a teacher. He's a really cool guy.
Yeah.
I had the same reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are just priceless experiences.
Priceless. You know, Reggie, I can go on and on and on, man. You are such an interesting guy. You need to write a book, though, because you got to start writing this stuff down, because you got a good memory.
Yeah, a pretty good memory. You know, once I focus on it, it's good. And I've started a book a couple of times.
Right.
I need to pick that back up.
You have pictures? Did you take pictures along the way?
Well, I got some pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at some. I got this one with Tommy Bolin up there.
Good.
And the Merv Griffin show.
Oh, cool.
I did that. I got one with Jimmy Smith. That's about all I had. I don't, you know, we didn't take a lot of pictures.
I know. I know.
And that hurts, you know, but other people did.
Yep. You know who's, you know Joe Vitale, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's his book. He sent me a copy of his book. He's got a million pictures, man. I don't know how he got them all, but he got, and they're all in color.
Oh, that's amazing.
You're probably in there somewhere.
I'm sure. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Reggie, you got anything else you want to talk about? Is there? I mean, there's so much more I could go into, but we'll bring you back. Yeah. We'll bring you back on again, you know, and update.
Okay.
And see what you're up to and. You know, I'll get your email address so I can send you some stuff.
Sure.
Can you say that over the air or no?
Yes. Well, say what?
Your email address? Or how?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
It's Reg Tones, R-E-G-T-O-N-E-S, #1.
#1, okay.
At Mac.com.
Mac.com. Okay, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, you can send an email there anytime.
Okay, great. Wonderful, man. Yeah. Here's your last question. This is going to be a hard one for you because you know so many people. But if you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie, to perform or collaborate or, you know, with anyone from the past or present, who would that be?
Oh, man, that's a lot of people. I mean, Stevie, for one.
Right.
I mean, he was responsible for bringing me out here. And I love Elton John. I loved his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun recording with him.
Yeah.
Great musician and wonderful guy. Jimmy Smith. You know, he was a funny guy. You know, he mm-hmm. was great. And, you know, just really haven't had too many bad experiences with anyone. I mean, I love everybody that I played with. Mm-hmm. It's just been great. And they've been very helpful. Rare Earth was great to play with, and you know, the one that sticks out in my mind is Stevie.
Stevie, yeah.
You play
all kinds of genres. There isn't one particular. Is there a genre that you like a little bit more? Do you like the R&B or more than say rock or not really?
Well, yeah, I'm an R&B guy,
right?
And I'm a rock guy.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I have different moves with, you know, Herbie Hancock. It was a blast.
Oh, God. I can imagine.
yeah, I grew up, you know, listening to Herbie.
Mm-hmm.
And my family, you know, they grew up listening to Herbie. Yeah, Herbie. That music reminded me of the streets of Detroit.
Yeah, right.
And it was just, to be in his presence was just really great. And mm-hmm. really, really a wonderful experience. And he's a nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to like, how about the Crusaders? Remember them?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love the Crusaders.
Yeah.
And Joe Sample.
Yeah,
and,
Joe Sample. Yeah.
Yeah, and Luke Felder. And I got a chance to play with them for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, somehow I didn't get the tour. I was auditioning with them. And,
right.
But I love their music.
How about playing with the Buddy Rich Band or Miles Davis?
There's a lot of Buddy Rich stories. But I played with Buddy Rich.
Oh, you did play with Buddy Rich. Oh, wow.
Yes, I did.
How about that?
I used to do the Merv Griffin show. I used to be in the house band.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Is there anything but you Buddy. Haven't done?
Yeah. Yeah, well,
man, you're not even 70
I don't
yet. You're an amazing guy, I tell you that.
Well, thank you.
I got to ask you though, is Buddy Rich as tough as they say he was? Was he a tough band leader?
Well, no.
No?
Not at all.
Really?
Not at all.
Huh.
You know, John Garin was a drummer on Merv.
Yep.
For years and years. And so when I joined the band, we were playing behind everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And John was right next to me to the left. And John said, leaned over to me and said, Reggie, okay, Buddy Rich is coming up next. And watch out. Because if he doesn't like you,
yeah,
he's going to like, you know, he's got a black belt.
Right, right.
And I told Johnny, I said, hey, man, if he come over that baffle, I'm going to take my bass like a baseball bat, and I'm going to
Hey, you...
It'll just be a fight on the stage.
Well, listen, you got fighting experience from Stevie, so you should be ready.
Yeah. But he was the greatest guy. I mean, you know, he came up and, you know, I figured as long as you could play.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not going to trip out on you or anything, you know. Yeah.
Well, you know why?
Because he's great. Wonderful.
That's because you're a great player. If you weren't, he would have let you have it.
I know. Well, if I was in a band, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I wasn't playing right.
That's
know,
right.
I can imagine. Yeah.
I've heard voice recordings of him letting the band have it on the bus.
Me too.
Yeah. It's on YouTube.
I know.
Reggie, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, man. It's been a real pleasure. You know? And we're going to get you back on again. Just email me. I'll send you my email and let me know what you're up to. And anything you have you want to promote, we'll do it. We're going to promote Elements, your solo album. And hopefully you'll put out something else here pretty soon, huh? Maybe?
Yeah, maybe. I'm working on something right now.
Good.
And I got about halfway done.
You can get so many friends to collaborate with you on an album if you wanted to. You know, it'd be so cool.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's right. And I do. I get some guys who are available sometime.
Yeah. You know, call them up like they call you.
Yeah, I will.
Thank you so much, Reggie. I appreciate it, man.
All right.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Purchase Reggie McBride's solo album, Elements, at Amazon.com. For more information about Reggie McBride, visit www.playingforchange.com. And also, you can go on allmusic.com, punch in Reggie McBride, and you'll find out a list of all the credits listed for Reggie McBride, which is unbelievable. I don't think there's anything Reggie hasn't done at this point. Very special thanks to Trace King for arranging this interview with Reggie McBride and the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsom of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments or suggestions for the show, contact me at interviewingthelegends.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. And it is real news, people. My new book is finally out, and it's entitled The Rockstar Chronicles, Series 1, Truths, Confessions, and Wisdom from the Music Legends That Set Us Free. Order yours today on hardcover or ebook at bookbaby.com or amazon.com. It features over 45 intimate conversations with some of the greatest rock legends on the planet. I promise you're going to love it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com, specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.